It was another huge game for Reading FC on Friday night as second place Watford hosted the Royals and promptly discarded them with two goals in as many minutes to leave the playoff dream teetering on the brink. Welcome to the Tarlhurst End Podcast, episode 260. I'm your host, Mark Mayer. This is the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. We've got a couple of the finest Reading minds with me this weekend to discuss what, well, it was just a bad night, wasn't it? Ben Thomas, The View from the Dolan, how's it going, mate?
I'm all right, yeah. I'm eager to kind of get into this one, really, and see what you guys thought, because I didn't think it was too bad. I know we lost, and that sounds ridiculous, but yeah, I thought the performance overall was all right, really.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a second. And Adam Jones, the Tarlhurst End's match preview man, how's it going?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. I'd agree with Ben. It was just a very, very weird game. I think we played reasonably all right, but then at the end of the day, all that matters at this stage of the season is kind of the result. So, yeah, absolutely gutting.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a second in the recap. We'll also be discussing some pretty, well, unpleasant, certainly unpleasant news that came out on Twitter after the game a little bit later on in the show as well. And before we move on, a big thank out as always. I think I've been forgetting to do this in the last couple of weeks, so I do apologise. Big thank you to our Patreon subscribers. If you want to put a few pennies in the virtual tip jar, that link is always on the page that goes up with this podcast. And also our sponsor, ZCZ Films, who continue to back us and hopefully make this show into something of a non-professional, or sort of less of a professional joke, as we move into the latter stages of the season. And Reading, you need those results. We didn't get it on Friday. Let's talk about that now in the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, where else to begin but those two early goals? Ismail Assar popping up with two, well, let's get it out of the way first. Very good finishes, I'd have to say. But Ben, for the first goal, we had Lewis Gibson in as the left back this week, and which was an interesting move, I think probably made out of fitness concerns for Omar Richards. But any concern we had over Lewis Gibson for that first goal, well, I thought if you're going to change the left back, you probably need to give him a bit more of a hand, because Ovie Ajayi are really guilty of not tracking back for the first goal. Second one, Lewis Gibson then loses possession himself, so more on himself that was. But really, we just found ourselves in a situation, big hype, big game, really want to start well. First 10 minutes, not so bad, and then bam, two goals conceded, and really that is the definition of an uphill battle from there on in.
Yeah, I think when the team news came out and Gibson was thrown in from the start, I didn't have a major issue with it, because bizarrely I nearly tweeted actually before the game that he's been pretty defensively solid when he's played, and at left back he didn't look particularly out of his depth. And then, you know, sort of 12, 13 minutes into the game, all his worst nightmares have come true, and he's effectively been guilty of both goals, really. I think what the most frustrating thing about it is that, you know, Watford scored from two complete non-events, and they were probably the hardest ones to convert in, over the course of the game, when you think about both teams and their opportunities to score. With the first one, I felt like he had far too much time, really. I think there was a few players not guilty, or rather guilty of not closing him down quick enough, and that allowed him the time to pop one in. I mean, you know, take nothing away from the strike, it was brilliant. And the second one, I mean, it's whichever way you look at it, it's horrific defending from Gibson. Why he's trying to play it out there when he's got Ajayi in front of him, I don't know. And then obviously gets caught in possession and an absolute rocket from Saar for the second one, and unfortunately from there it was game over. Other than those two goals in those 2 minutes, I actually thought that we were all right. I really did. You know, it sounds like a really cliche thing to say, but you take both of those out and it probably would have been one of our better performances of the season, really. So very, very frustrating. You know, again, an opportunity to score from Puskas, which I know we'll talk about in a minute, but you know, it's just those fine margins. And as you said at the start, Mark, the only thing that matters really is not getting those 3 points. And we desperately needed, I think, something out of the game. and to lose in the manner that we did was very disheartening and very disappointing. So it makes Friday an incredibly important game. And obviously the next few games gives us very little wiggle room to not get maximum points, basically. But yeah, hugely frustrating night all round. And you have to say, you have to feel for those players on the pitch because they gave absolutely everything. And I hope that they're going to hold on to that positivity kind of going into this week and on to Friday.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is that when it comes to those ruthless moments, I felt like that's where Watford took advantage of those early, you know, they're both errors, obviously different players making them, different sorts of errors, but both the goals came from errors, Adam. And this is the thing, isn't it, is that is the defence something that we've really kind of taken our eye off this season? Because we've been so obsessed with Zhao scoring and then Zhao not scoring and everything, the defence has... It feels weird to me, but it doesn't feel like our best factor, our defence, but it doesn't feel like our worst factor either. It feels it's almost too in the middle, isn't it? And because it's not been particularly great at keeping goals out, you know, we've had some really good clean sheets, but when we don't have clean sheets, we tend to concede more than one goal. Is the defence, you know, something that ultimately in the post-season, post-mortem, that's really going to be something we have to look at? And this is the sort of game that typifies that.
It's a strange one because you look at, you know, Michael Morrison, who's out injured, and we've said that he's probably one of the best, you know, players that we've had this season. And I think also the hype surrounding McIntyre and Holmes, quite correctly, because they've really stepped up to the plate. And also because of the injuries, I think we've been very forgiving of the kind of defence sometimes because of some of the injuries that we've had and the need to put Holmes at right back and the need to kind of have McIntyre at left back or Gibson as an example yesterday at left back. So yeah, I think we have been very forgiving, but you've got to remember this is a side that conceded what, one goal in their first seven league games of the season, or first eight league games of the season. And then it's kind of, I don't know, it's not fallen apart, but we just haven't been as good since. We haven't managed to regain that sort of defensive record. And I know it was fantastic at the start of the season, but yeah, and also you've got to think of the individual mistakes as well. And, you know, you could say Laurent on the first goal probably could and should have done better, been more aggressive with Saar. Second, obviously, we've said with Lewis Gibson losing the ball. And also, if you think back as well, I mean, Derby in the last game, you know, prior to Watford, we switched off. And maybe that was a team error, but also you look at Barnsley game as well, where there's been an individual error with Yeardom, and he was given away the penalty needlessly, and we've got to have a look at that as well. So, and those types of costly mistakes from Yeardom and Gibson, and I'm not trying to scapegoat anyone, but those kind of costly mistakes will be, well, as I say, costly when it comes to the end of the season in the playoff race, when every point right now is absolutely vital. And that's the reason why I said that the results are, you know, a key. You know, we can talk about the performances and I absolutely agree with, you know, you and Ben in the fact that we were fantastic, you know, especially towards the end of the first half, and we were actually not that bad. But at this stage of the season, results are what matter, and results are going to get us to the playoffs.
Yeah, let's talk about the response then to going 2-0 down, because the game certainly isn't over at that point. And Watford, it's so difficult, I think, to gauge the performance after we go 2-0 down, because on the one hand, Reading created a lot of chances. They looked really good in the build-up play. They didn't concede many chances. But on the other hand, it kind of felt to me like Watford weren't really trying. It felt like Watford were in second gear. It felt like if we scored and they needed to score again, they would. And Ben, I think with the, you know, you mentioned the missed chances, Puskas had an open goal that kind of bounced onto his shin because the defender does get a touch on Mate's cross. Amazing play by Elise, by the way, before that to create that chance first. But the cross, it gets Puskas on the shin, really. So it's not a clean connection, but kind of feel like he hasn't opened his body up enough to score into the empty net. Lucas Zhao came on later on in the game, didn't do much better. What this means for me is that it just reminded me that this Reading team is absolutely amazing in the middle third of the pitch. the interplay, the ball retention. It's lovely. It's amazing to watch. Sadly, that is the third of the pitch that matters the least, because it's not where the goal is. So in defence, we have a few issues, as we've just talked about. In attack, we have issues with missing chances. But Ben, in the middle third, we're the best team in the Championship, it feels like.
Yeah, I mean, going back to your point about Elise, I mean, he was the best player on the pitch for us by far yesterday. And there were times when he really took the game by the scruff of the neck, and that Puskas chances is the example of that, really. We scored that goal, it's a different game. And I feel like, and I don't want to be critical of Pano, because I think he's done exceptionally well, but the one thing that we've said time and again on this show and in our articles is that he just doesn't get his substitutions right. And for me, when we didn't score before half-time, I would have gone and just put Lucas Jow up top with Puskas and gone, you know what, let's just abandon what we normally do. If we concede another goal, it's game over anyway. But if we can go out and get another one, you know, and kind of get the bit between our teeth a bit, get us back to 2-1 and we're in the game again. So, you know, it's very, very difficult to criticise the players on the pitch too much. I thought Puskas was very good. I thought he was incredibly annoying yesterday to the Watford defence. I think you're right about him not opening up his body. I don't think he was really anticipating the quality of that ball to come in, really. And had he been on his toes a bit more, that would have been a goal. But you know, we have consistently been very good in that midfield area. You know, Lawrence dropped off a little bit. I think that's probably part of the fact that Rinomata got injured and he had to play with Semedo, which didn't help him at all, really. But the thing that's cost us really is the defensive errors across the course of the season. We've had too many players that have been out of form for a length of time. So you think about Raphael towards Christmas, he was out of sorts. McIntyre has had his spells where he's not been particularly good. You know, Richards last couple of weeks has looked quite tired. So, you know, we need to really think about how we're going to link all those elements together more fluently and more consistently. And with Watford, that Sarr will get the plaudits, but the difference for me was Will Hughes last night. I mean, he was absolutely outstanding. And he was everything that you'd want from a midfielder in that position. He was putting tackles in, he was tracking runners, he was going forward with the ball, he was spraying passes forward. And it's very difficult to compete with a player like that when he is driving the team. And there's been time and again this season where we've not had the players to drive our team forward in the absence of leaders like Moore, in the absence of leaders like Morrison. You know, Rinomata maybe because of his energetic work, but apart from that, there's no other leaders. And Will Hughes was that leader for Watford, in my opinion, last night, and he was the difference.
It's a good point. And the thing is, as you said, the subs as well, is that Hughes, I think, shows that in a really good light, but so do the subs. And if you look across the Watford team, there are 7 or 8 players who you think are playing the Premier League week in, week out. For Reading, you know, it's not a debate I want to have immediately, but 3 or 4 maybe. And this gets exemplified on the subs bench, because yes, we had Zhao come on, who I agree I'd have thrown him on at halftime as well. Richards came on. It kind of felt like he could only do half an hour, and he came on the hour mark. So that kind of felt like, you know, he was getting what he could out of him, maybe if he wasn't fit. But Aluko and Baldock came on with like 3 minutes to go, which is just kind of a token gesture at that point. Whereas you look at Watford and they had Craig Cathcart come off the bench, multiple Premier League seasons. Andre Gray cost them like 18.5 million quid. Isaac Success, 12.5 million. Carlos Sanchez came on at half time. He starts in World Cup games for Colombia. It's just a different, you know, Watford obviously second, we're a playoff fight, but it's a different level, isn't it? And when we're up against that, it just feels like we're out of our depth almost.
And you're right. I mean, the Cathcart thing, when he came on, I just laughed because, you know, I can never remember the guy's name that came off, but it was the number 5. Again, fantastic game. Very strong all season for Watford. He comes off. Cathcart, he's got, what, 30, 35 caps, maybe even 40 for Northern Ireland? And at that point, you just laugh because you think, yeah, as much as I don't want to do a disservice to Aluko and Baldock, what's the point of bringing them on at that point? You know, and with Richards giving him half an hour, no point. You know, it's not going to change the game. We need strength and depth. We need players that are going to be able to commit to trying to win the game. And that was the frustrating thing last night. And obviously with Andre Gray coming on as well, he just thought, well, he's going to score it because he always scores against us. Luckily he didn't. But it is that situation where the subs and the strength and depth, as we said time and again, is not good enough for us to be able to sustain you know, what we all want to sustain at the moment.
Yeah.
Can I just add, well, yeah, can I just add that I don't think the break, the kind of spell before the interval really helped us, because it gave Pownall a reason not to change anything, because we were, I totally agree that Watford had taken their foot off the gas, and that's the reason why we managed to get back into it, really. But, you know, some of the movement and some of the, you know, some of the chances that we had, I think was quite encouraging for us, you know, even though we were missing them. And then I said at half time that we needed to, you know, go on and take our chances after the break. And obviously, you know, second half was really flat in the end, and that was a massive disappointment. But maybe that spell didn't really help us, because then, you know, Pownall was probably damned if he changed it and damned if he don't. So it's, yeah, it was a massive dilemma for Pownall at the break.
Yeah, well, let's move on then here from Pownall in a second. The only thing I'd add to this discussion, because I do think that squad depth, I think, is really going to be the thing that we'll look at the end of the year if we have a post-mortem of Reading not being in the playoffs or not going up. Hopefully we won't have that. But the only other thing I'd add is the injuries, and McIntyre, Morrison out for the season now. Swift has basically been nowhere for most of the campaign. Richards wasn't fit to start yesterday. Yeardon, Mate and Puskas have all been out loads too. That's another factor to it. And I think we'll get into that more as the season reaches, or, you know, finishes up. But let's hear from Veljko Paunović now, and then we'll go on into the mailbag, and we've got some questions from you guys to answer about the game.
I think today football was cruel to us. I think with the game we played and the output out there, physical output, which keeps breaking down the other teams. Again, so many guys, so many players, unfortunately, and I'm not happy about it, got injured just because we kept pounding the rock and kept looking for that goal that unfortunately didn't come today. We lacked of execution. Which is crucial in this point of, always, it's always crucial. But what I'm trying to say is that the performance we had today really was positive, was in every aspect of the game, we controlled and we played better than our opponent. But unfortunately, again, the two stunners at the beginning, We didn't lose the composure after that, but it was just too much.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Bit of housekeeping to do after last week's show. You may remember we were asked a question on the best first name duos of Reading teams from today and yesteryear. And I think Alex Pearce, Alex McCarthy, one mentioned Andy Yeardon, Andy Winnemotta from this team. We've had a few sent in, so I'll read some out. Nicky Shaw and Nicky Forster, it's a good shout there. Jamie Cures and Jamie Ashdown, John Oster, John Halls, Danny Williams, Danny Guthrie, and A.D. Williams, A.D. Vibash as well. So thanks to those who have sent those in. Sean Burgess, Sam Parkin, Tom Cotton, all sending those in. So that's, I think, probably my favourite out of those, probably the Shawy-Forster combination. Or Pierce McCarthy as well, I think, is decent.
Yeah.
Go on, Ben, you got one as well.
As I say, they're much better than the ones we came up with last week, so fair play to those people for sending them in, because I was trying to think for ages afterwards and I couldn't come up with any, but they're infinitely better than the ones, I think, certainly the ones I came up with anyway.
So let's get on then for this week. If you want to send in your questions, there's always the Twitter and the Facebook. We always do a call out before the show for the questions. And also there is the email as well, thetilehurstend@gmail.com, to fire those in. Sam Richards has done just that. And he says, for me, Josh Lauren has dropped his form off since the turn of the year. I think he's gone unnoticed and he's been unlucky to escape, or he has been lucky to escape criticism. With the emphasis on us now to win games, is there a case to put John Swift into his position alongside Winnemotta? I think so. Well, obviously, this presumes that Swift will be fit in the next few weeks, which obviously we hope to do. And this is something that I was thinking of during the Watford game, Adam, is that we effectively play with a back six, because the two, Winnemotta and Lauren, I think they are a very good pairing. And I think they've done us a lot more good than harm this year. And they deserve credit for that. But is there a point that, you know, Sam says about lucky to escape criticism, is there not a point that at some point Paunović quite often, maybe he could have put a Luka on in the Watford game for for Lotman, because I think that he's not particularly brilliant going forward. And that when we are behind in games, which we really, really struggle to overturn when we have been behind in games, we have kept those two, or we've had Semedo instead of one of them. And it just feels to me like that's a little bit unambitious. And Josh Lowen hasn't been able to, you know, he's not the sort of player who can turn games around when you are 1-0 down or 2-0 down.
Yeah, I think to me, I think it'll be good. I mean, I kind of agree with the comment in the sense that it would be good to mix things up a bit, because in some way I'm attached to the attachment of Lauren and Rinomoto. It seems like they come as a pair, really. But no, I mean, I just think that, you know, we do need to mix it up sometimes and be a bit more ambitious, maybe against the likes of Huddersfield at home, maybe on the final day of the season, where we may not need two defensive mids. And I mean, Lauren was poor last night, I have to agree, but maybe that's because we expect so much of him. And, you know, I, the only thing that I would question really is, were we, you know, defensively strong enough with Swift when he's played at defensive mid before? I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, when Swift finally does come back, I think it's definitely an option that we have to consider, especially, you know, when we've got Elise, Ajaria and Mate as the kind of three in front of Laurent and Rinomoto. It gives Swift the opportunity to play kind of in a deeper position. So yeah, I think it's something we could trial out. And it's a position, kind of a position that he's played in before. So I wouldn't be too against that, but I'm just hoping that Laurent and Rinomoto can kind of, get back to their peak in a way and continue being kind of consistent.
It's funny, man, because I would probably say in the first half of the year, I found Laurent to be probably a little bit better than Rinomoto. But in the last few weeks, I've been really impressed with Rinomoto, particularly in the Barnsley game. And it feels like it has switched a little bit. There was talk that I think Lauren was carrying an injury at one point, which I'd have a lot of sympathy for in terms of his performance dropping off. Again, it can come back to the squad depth argument if you want it to. But in terms of the ambition of the team, I do feel like, you know, again, if we have the players to do it, I do feel like there were certain times when we probably would have to say, you know, we only need one of them.
Yeah, I think, you know, the point about Lauren is that I think he's just exhausted. You know, the amount of energy that he puts in and the amount of drive that he gives to that area of the pitch. you know, certainly in the early stages of the season, he was getting forward more. And obviously, you talk about the goal at Blackburn away, which was absolutely brilliant. You know, he's not been able to get us forward as much. But as I said earlier, I think what hurt him really was Rinomoto being injured and having to kind of play with Semedo, who's a very different player to Rinomoto, in my opinion, anyway. And I would agree with your point about Rinomoto looking better than Lauren recently, because, you know, he's been on the sidelines for a bit. He's had a little bit of an injury. Maybe, I can't remember how many games he sat out, 2-3, something like that. But it gives him a breather to take stock and go on from there. I think we're going to get to a stage this season where we've got to throw caution to the wind. And I think, you know, Paunet's kind of already shown it a little bit, where he's kind of ditching that loyalty a little bit more in terms of, you know, dropping Jao for the Derby game, which was the right decision to make. He might consider doing that with Loren or Rinomoto in the next few games, because we're going to have to go forward. We're going to have to commit men forward, and we're going to have to get goals in games to win them, to get to where we want to be. So it's the possibility. I don't think Swift is ready at the moment to come back in and start a game, but, you know, I don't work for the club's medical department, who at the moment are probably the busiest people at the club, really. So, you know, it's definitely an option. But I think we need one of them on the pitch at all times, regardless, out of Rinomoto and Lauren.
Yeah, I'd agree, you need that base. The next question comes in just as, I mean, we're kind of deliberately recording this podcast now so we could get the idea of the playoff picture from the other games that have been kicking off. And I must admit, I'm nervously refreshing my Who Scored website page, because I've got the championship table up. And I know the next question is Alistair saying, what do we have to do to get the playoffs points-wise? He says that we need to win all of our remaining games, which are five games left now. I'm nervously refreshing the page because I know that at some point the table is going to switch to Reading being outside the playoffs, and outside the playoffs with, you know, the team above us with a game in hand. And that's because this Saturday, Swansea won at Millwall. Cardiff have drawn with Blackburn, which was a late goal for Blackburn, quite useful for us. Brentford have smashed Preston. Barnsley have scored late two second half goals to beat Middlesbrough. Bournemouth have whopped Coventry. And I think that's pretty much it that we need to worry about. But yeah, that's pretty much a clean sweep of wins for the top six, aside from us, which we are now not a part of. And it does leave us with five games to go. And we have to, you know, we have to have a team drop points now, even though Barnsley are going to be four clear of us with a not quite as good goal difference. Bournemouth are going to be 2 points clear of us with a game in hand and a much better goal difference. So, Adam, at what point are we saying that we just need to win all our games?
I think very shortly. I have to be honest with you. I mean, when I was looking at Bournemouth and when they appointed Woodgate, I wasn't overly optimistic or for Bournemouth fans, to be honest. I didn't think they would do as well as they have. But I'm not sure. I think Harry Redknapp might actually be back at Bournemouth because he lives local helping out there. So maybe that's something that he's done. I know that Redknapp done it with Darren Wassell at Derby County a few years back. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's done the same there. But yeah, I wasn't overly optimistic for them. But I think that the fact that Bournemouth are doing so well is making me realise now that we pretty much need to win, I would say, pretty much all of our games, I think, around about now, to be honest, because we've been far too inconsistent. And the fact that we've only got, what was it, one win in the last six games, I think it just shows, you know, that we've just been too inconsistent, and it shows exactly why we're, you know, currently out of the playoff zone. And it's massively disappointing. So, yeah, I think round about now we need to start winning all of our games, and it's going to be hugely difficult. You know, even against teams like Cardiff, who have, you know, done reasonably well under Mick McCarthy, obviously not as well recently, but, you know, when he first started there, they were flying. So, and we've also got Norwich and Swansea. So, yeah, it's going to be a very tough fixture list. But yeah, around about now, we need to start winning all of our games.
Yeah, I think we'll be lucky to get in the playoffs if we don't win all our games. I think 13 points, four wins and a draw, we could probably get away with. I mean, we've got Norwich. At the very least, we said about this awful running we had, we got a couple of the games out of the way now, and that it's now Norwich and Swansea to contend with, as well as you know, Cardiff, who are kind of hanging on, and then Huddersfield as well, which is a game that if we go into the last game of the season, still in the picture, I think a lot of people would say that now. I think that, you know, just looking over as those results have all come in now, key stat for me at the moment is that since the 1st of February, Reading are 12th in the table, 19 points from 15 games. That's, we've been on a worse run than Luton since the start of February, worse run than Nottingham Forest. Swansea haven't done hugely better than us, neither with Brentford, but you look at Barnsley, they've got 35 points, that's 14 points more than us since the start of February. The same, Watford also 14 points better off. Even Bournemouth, who sacked their manager in that sentence, that sort of period, are better off than us in that period by quite some distance. So, yeah, I think it's just, if we don't beat Cardiff, then I think that probably would be a time to, you know, if we're going to hit the panic button, that might just be it, if not already. Kieran, then last question of the mailbag. He said, when can we sell Zhao and buy players that play as a team and not individually? Ben, I said the other day that if Zhao had the season that he'd had in opposite, and he'd started a bit poorly and, you know, had a few misses, and then he'd had an amazing second half of the season, we'd be talking about it as an absolutely stunning, you know, we'd be delighted with it. We'd forget everything about that poor period. But because we're in that poor period, it feels so much worse. And it feels worse even more because he was so good, you know, at the start of the season. So I think, you know, in terms of selling him, I'm not going to say that's what we should do. The idea that he's an individual player, not a team player, do you think there's anything in that? Or do you think that he is actually a good team player?
Right, well, Kieran, I'll be honest with you. If you don't want a player in our team that scores 20 plus goals in a season, you're probably in football for the wrong reason. Because, like, yeah, I mean, he's a mercurial talent in the same way that probably Eric Cantona was. But, you know, it... for me, I just think that's a nonsense statement because he's been one of our better players. Yeah, I mean, his form's dropped off, but players do that. And that's just a, I just feel that's a complete overreaction to where he's at the moment. The problem that we've got, we said time again, is that we haven't, you know, we haven't got players that can take those places of the players that are out of form because we don't have the strength and depth. So you have to go back to the Lauren thing. Yeah, he probably does need a spell on the sidelines, but we've got no one else realistically that could fill in and do that job. So I wouldn't say that I agree with that statement at all. I mean, there will be sales in the summer, 100%, you know, probably whether we go up or not. But I would say that probably Lucas Jau is one of the players that we definitely want to keep because you give him a bit of love and a bit of confidence. He's going to score goals and he's not in great form at the moment. But I think that kind of comment about him not being a team player is probably not accurate based on the fact that everyone went to celebrate with him on Monday when he scored the goal after a horrific weekend. So, yeah, I'm not really sure what else to say on that one, Mark, really.
I think the thing is for me is that when it comes to team or individual level with Lucas Jau, Kieran kind of says, and I get his point that he isn't a huge team player. I'm not sure he has loads and loads of assists or anything like that or bring people into play, but that's kind of the point of him being the spearhead of the attack is that when Reading have played really well this season is when everything has been in the build-up to give Jau the opportunity to score and he's taken that opportunity. Now, Reading have still been doing that for the last few weeks. He's just not been taking the chances, so he's out of the team. So I think that's kind of the point of him is that he is an individualistic player because if he's trying to play in other players, there aren't really other players to play in because they aren't as far forward as he is. So I think that's kind of it for me. I don't think we'll sell him. Maybe if he'd have, as I say, scored 20 goals in the second half of the season, we might have had to worry about that, but I don't think it's going to happen. So, yeah, I think, you know, I can understand the frustration with him because I've been frustrated with him this
immensely few weeks. Frustrating.
But, I think that's kind of the point of him, isn't it, that he is the individual, player. So please keep sending in those questions and everything. As I said, the Facebook, Twitter and the Gmail. We'll move on then into News Bites and discuss some more things that happened on Friday night.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Rs!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Okay, News Bites time. Let's get the other Reading FC teams in first. The women's team this week was an international break, so they didn't play. They've got Tottenham in the FA Cup on Sunday the 18th. The under-23s lost 4-2 to Middlesbrough on Saturday. They've got Burnley next on Friday the 16th. The under-18s, they were in action against West Ham. They've actually next got Arsenal on Tuesday, so kind of catching up a little bit, I think, with games. There's a 0-0 draw with West Ham. And, well, let's get into what was really probably the, something that none of us wanted to see at all on Friday night after the game. Liam Moore taking to Twitter to call out a poll that was conducted by an anonymous Reading fan account that's supposedly been around for a little bit of time, this account, that's now been deleted because it was, I'm not going to express what was exactly said in that poll, but there was absolutely no question whatsoever that it was racism and that it was completely unacceptable and completely not anything that anyone deserves to see, least of all the man himself who, you know, Liam Moore, I think, as a man and as a player has represented Reading absolutely in exemplary terms for years now and really deserves the utmost of respect and certainly doesn't deserve this sort of stuff. And, you know, he said he's going to remove his Twitter. I've not actually gone to check to see if he's done that yet or if he is going to do it, but I know that there's been a big boycott for certain teams like Swansea and Rangers done it for this week. And obviously this is something that has been going on for, you know, obviously a long, long time, but even more of a spotlight has been brought on it recently. And it's something that we are really, you know, really unhappy to see. And it's really upsetting to see this go on. And I think what we just wanted to talk about was really just how, I suppose, how we as a fan base can deal with it, how we as Reading fans can come to terms with the fact that there is this sort of thing that does go on in small pockets of social media and everything. And I guess, Ben, I'll start with you because this was, it was just the worst sort of feeling when obviously you've seen it happen to other clubs, and it's happened to Reading players as well, but it's just the worst sort of feeling to happen to someone who, you know, we are just huge fans of Liam Waugh, and to see it happen was just not nice at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing to say is that none of us, you know, as white males on this podcast at the moment, can imagine the kind of the distress and the discomfort and the pain that Liam felt last night, seeing that, and anyone who experiences racism in that form, kind of how they feel experiencing that because of their skin colour. And it's I'm not going to waste time talking about the person's motives, because there's no point. What I would say, and hopefully Liam is kind of back on social media soon. You know, I don't think it's right to criticise him, as people have, for deleting his social media account, because none of us would know what we would do in that situation. So if you are listening, Liam, to this, it's not an accurate representation of the Reading fan base. It's not an accurate representation of how we see you. And it's not an accurate representation of what you deserve from us as a fan base, really, or anyone. I think, you know, from my point of view, it's very difficult, because, you know, I've been abused on social media. I'm sure you guys have been abused on social media. You've got a bit of abuse and some back chat from people. And so have the writers for the Tallahassee End. But it's never because of our skin colour. It's because of our opinions and our views and our articles and, you know, how people see that. And that's, you know, healthy debate is brilliant. We've always said that. But actually, you know, people take it too far and they get personal, and it's happened to me, and it's not nice, but you move on. Twitter is a great space for people to come together and share opinions respectfully. What I would say is that it's very, very difficult to understand the motives behind why anyone would want to do that. And Ollie, you know, hit the nail on the head this morning with his article when he said it's to show off and to get attention. And I personally think that that's right. I the only experience of racism that I've ever seen at a game was way back in 2015. Actually, it's not that long ago, but it was a cup game against Portsmouth, and it must have been late August. And it was at the time, I don't know if you guys remember, but Hal Robson-Carney was still with us, and he was getting so much abuse about his quality of performance and his play and his style and all the rest of it on social media. And it was kind of quite late in the second half, and we were drawn at that point, and he knocked this ball and it just went straight out, and this guy two rows behind me just turned around and started, you know, shouting, "You Welsh this, you Welsh that, go home." And it that really struck a nerve with me, because I'm Welsh heritage anyway, but also the element of the go home. And I just thought, you've come down to Portsmouth, you're a Reading fan, you've got a Reading shirt on, and you're doing that to one of our own players. And I just said to him, like, you know, what's the point? And he gave it the back chat as well. But in that moment, selfishly, I felt better, because I'd kind of challenged it. And I think this is it. We just need to challenge it all the time, and we just need to report these things, because it's beyond comprehension, and it's beyond anything that anyone would ever want. You know, our friends, our family members, players at our club, our own fans to experience. And it's just disgraceful. And until there is a serious consequence and football clubs take a real severe stand on this, it will just keep happening. And it makes me feel desperately sad for the victims and for those people that have to read that, because, you know, they shouldn't have to.
Yeah, no, I'd echo all that. And I think this is the thing, is that when, you know, the conversation inevitably turns to solutions and everything like that. And I think that there is a sense of powerlessness that the vast majority of people feel, because we as, you know, common people are generally unable to stop these sort of things before they happen. You can call them out, but then it's happened, the damage is almost done by then, which kind of adds to that sense of helplessness. Whether, you know, I'm kind of the opinion that the emphasis being put on social media operators, you know, the people who run social media, Twitter, Instagram and everything like that, is only ever going to go so far. I know that there's a million and one reasons why people are allowed to make anonymous accounts. A lot of those reasons are good. A lot of those reasons aren't so good. And I kind of have the opinion in the next decade or so, whether there is a chance that a new social media platform is going to emerge that doesn't allow you to be anonymous in some way, and that will be where people jump to. I would not be surprised at all if that's the case. But at the end of the day, this is the situation we're in now, Adam. And I think that it's just there's a large feeling of helplessness, I guess. Certain, probably, you know, I can only assume for the people that are being being targeted.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with this large sense of powerlessness, really. But the one thing that I was heartened by was the response by Reading fans on Twitter as a whole, condemning this and wanting action to be taken on it. And, you know, I just hope that action taken against this individual sets a precedent for other people and acts as a kind of deterrent for people who want to abuse people based off the colour of their skin or their gender or their sexual orientation or anything like that. I was, you know, saying last night how many openly gay footballers are in the Premier League. Well, none right now. And it just goes to show there's a lot of things that we can do on certainly, you know, a lot of different issues, and racism, you know, with BLM and that sort of thing has come under the spotlight in the past year or so. So, yeah, I was, there's only so much that we can do. Us as Reading fans, you know, I will continue to keep on suffocating racism along with other people, other Reading fans on social media. And we really came together as one community. And if we can continue to suffocate racism, then that's what we can do on our part. There's only a certain amount that we can do. And I'm hoping that, you know, social media companies do take real action on it and not just talk. Because, you know, I like action being taken and not just talk. Do you know what I mean? I want things, you know, tangible things actually done about the situation. But what I did last night on Twitter was compared racism to classism. We have school uniforms, one, because it makes people look, you know, really smart and that sort of thing. But it also gives a sense of uniformity where people are not judged based off, you know, what they wear because everyone's wearing the same. And that measure has to stay in control and has to stay there and stay implemented, definitely in the short term anyway, because attitudes have not changed enough towards a more tolerant position. And it's kind of the same with racism on social media. I think social media companies now have to take control and put in some sort of process where there is accountability, more accountability anyway. I know there's issues behind that and you know, LGBT community and homophobic parents and that sort of thing. So it's going to be a very, you know, a long process and we need to find a solution that doesn't harm people. But, you know, a solution nevertheless does need to be found. And you know, whilst there's still a lot of racism in our society in the short term, now I'm not saying that as a whole we're a massively racist country or anything like that, but whilst there's still, you know, those idiots who thinks it's all right to judge someone based off the color of their skin, you know, measures do have to be introduced in the short term. So like social media companies like Twitter introducing a verification system, and then over time hopefully we can just continue to eradicate racism. I'm not sure if it will ever go extinct, unfortunately, But it'll be a long-term project. You know, that's the one thing that I am certain of. And hopefully we can continue to eradicate it and suffocate racism and other forms of discrimination, because it absolutely has no place in football. It has no place in society or, in fact, anywhere, to be honest. So, yeah, you know, I'm obviously really disappointed by the incident, but heartened by kind of Reading fans and their response, really heartened.
Yeah,
I think the other thing to point out is that, you know, sorry, Mark, but I was just going to say, you know, we're all looking to social media companies to kind of check it and to do something. But I wrote this down at 1:36 p.m. today. I went on the Sky Sports football app and the Liam Moore story was third bottom. And you think, well, if we're in a situation where a professional athlete has had to delete his own personal social media account because he's been abused on the colour of his skin, and it's not even the top article on the Sky Sports football app, then what are we doing? Are we normalising it? Is that just like, oh, we're just going to bump it, keep bumping it down until it falls off the ticker sort of thing? It's ridiculous. It really is. And Sky Sports are doing a lot, but they're not doing enough either, because that for me, forget he's a Reading player, forget he's a captain, forget, you know, whichever club he plays for, he has felt that the only logical step that he's got left is to delete his social media account, and that is the third bottom news article on their ticker. It's ridiculous. I just think it's absolutely absurd. And the more they keep running these adverts, great. But it, you know, fair play to those clubs that have not put anything or not going to put anything on social media for the next 7 days, because at least they're taking a stand, and it's a powerful stand and it's a start. But it's not going to end there. You've got to keep pushing this, and big companies with a lot of sway have got to keep working on this. And so I was personally very disappointed with that, because I felt like it should have just been there, you know, certainly for 24 hours, so that everyone can see the impact that this disgusting abuse has.
This is a subject that we don't want to talk about. We don't want to have to discuss it and become involved in it, because we don't want it to be happening. But the fact of the matter is that when it reaches our fan base, when it comes up in our fan base, we will talk about it. We won't hesitate to call it out and everything like that when it needs to be done. And really, I think there's as much as we can say on it for now. So with that in mind, then let's go and finish off the show in a big match preview.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals. So be loud and be proud for the big match preview.
Right then, let's talk about some football again, because it's another big game for the Royals, as they say, on Friday night at 6 p.m. at home to Cardiff. And we are on the telly this time once again. So pull up a chair, grab that popcorn, and see how many times you hit the back of that chair, because it probably won't be very much. Proper edge of the seat action, this. And Cardiff having a drawn actually today to Blackburn, probably just about rules them out of the playoff race. That's 9 points they are off of Bournemouth now, with 5 games to go. Bournemouth with a game in hand does feel like a bit too much for them. So really, you know, this is a game that just Reading have to win, Adam.
Yep, must win, 6-pointer. You know, it's, we can't overstate how much, you know, how important this game is, because it is massively, massively important for our season. I think, you know, people say throughout the season that it's, you know, games are a must win, and we, you know, we must win that one. You know, even some people said this is a, you know, must not lose thing. But I think even the draws are a killer at the moment. You know, we've seen a case in point over the past, you know, month or two, where we've had draws against Barnsley and Nottingham Forest and other teams where, you know, we should have got all 3 points from the game, you know, on paper anyway. And maybe, you know, throughout the game, looking at, you know, on the balance of things, we should have taken all 3 points. And for me, that's the reason why I felt that some games have been, you know, 2 points dropped, including Barnsley. I know that Barnsley are a very good side, but you know, we should have taken all 3 points with the chances that we did have. And, you know, as I said, draws are the killer as well. So this is a must-win game. We've got to get the 3 points in this one. And, you know, I know that since signing a new deal, Mick McCarthy has not done fantastically with Cardiff. I think he's got Mark Bowen syndrome. But, yeah, I think we've got to win this one, not underestimate them, because, you know, they're in, you know, a decent place for a reason. It's because of the run that they went on under, you know, the same manager that they have now. So yeah, we've got to be switched on, and it's absolutely must win for us. And you know, every single department, the defence, the midfield, the attack, you know, the goalkeeper, they all have to play their part on Friday. And if they don't, then we won't win the game.
Yeah, Cardiff have only won one of their last 6 league games, as have Reading now. So, Ben, this is the question, is how do we beat Cardiff? Do we keep Puskas in? Do we, I mean, the defence and midfield are probably just going to look like they did against Watford. And they're probably going to play, you know, as I can't imagine any surprises for this game. So how is the magic formula that Paunovic is going to be working on for the next week?
I think the positive is that he has got a full week, you know, Friday to Friday. You know, you get the weekend to kind of, or this weekend to I would imagine, rest, and then you've got a full week of training leading up to it. home game as well. So, you know, it not that really makes much difference without fans, but there's no travel involved. You know, another positive, we've already beaten Cardiff this season. I don't know. I mean, I know we talked about it last week in terms of playing two up front, but as I said earlier, he's going to have to get to a point where he's going to have to change the system and just go out and win games. I agree with Adam, who mentioned earlier. I don't think we're at that stage yet. I think we have enough to beat Cardiff on Friday. And the reason for that is that I was, you know, again, despite the result, but I was very, very encouraged with the performance in large spells last night. I thought we were very good going forward. I think that will give them confidence to be able to mix it with what I think are the best team in the league in Watford. And, you know, Cardiff, you know, them drawing today is a great result because actually, you know, mathematically, of course, they can still make the playoffs, but they won't. You know, there's no way they're going to make up the 9 points, as you say. So I would be surprised if he drops Puskas from the start. That said, I think if the game is not going well, he will hopefully bring Zhao on a little bit earlier and go more attacking. You know, Cardiff have got some good players for me. Kiefer Moore is one of the better strikers in the league. You know, regardless of what you think about him, Sean Morrison has been great for them this season. So they've got some really good players. I just think this season's been too much for them, and hopefully we will catch them on another, you know, negative day for them and get the 3 points.
Yeah, let's talk predictions then, because Westie and Ollie have continued their fine form by picking up the Watford defeat. So Westie is now on 27 points in the prediction league. Myself and Handbags, who are leading for a long time, second, joint second really, with 25 points. Ollie's on 24, Sim is on 20. I will kick us off for the predictions then and say that Reading are going to get a 2-1 win, because I think, yeah, hopefully that Watford sort of, you know, that first half performance is the real Reading, and it's the sort of thing we can do again. And we beat Derby. We did pretty well against them. Adam, what are you going to say for prediction?
I'm going to go with 2-2. I remember a couple of seasons ago when we were 2-0 up, I think it was a brace by Mo Barrow. And then I think it was Bennett who got the kind of consolation. And then it was Lee Tomlin in the last minute with the help of goal line technology that made it 2-2. Now, I think, you know, we're going to go forward and try and get quite a few goals, because we need to come out straight away and make a fast start. And I think that may leave gaps kind of in the defence, and that will be useful for Cardiff to exploit. So I think it will be probably 2-2 for me. I have to say that it's, I think it will be a high scoring game, but we need the 3 points. So I hope that my prediction doesn't come true.
Ben, what are you thinking?
I'm going 2-0 Reading. I think they would have spent all week looking at the table and being frustrated with being in seventh. So I think they're going to go all out, and I think, you know, could well be more than two, but I will settle for a 2-0 Reading win.
I think we'd certainly settle all for that. And just to keep in mind the playoff watch as well, on Tuesday, Bournemouth go away to Huddersfield. Obviously be really important if Huddersfield can get us a win there. Swansea go to Sheffield Wednesday on Tuesday as well. Swansea host Wickham on Saturday. Watford go to Luton. They're pretty much gone, though. Brentford play Millwall also. I suppose all those teams are pretty much gone. Bournemouth, however, on Saturday at 8 p.m. go to Norwich. So that is a big moment for us. And then on Sunday, Barnsley play Coventry away. So Coventry, you know, they couldn't do anything against Bournemouth today, but they are in a relegation battle. The sort of team that I'd rather be than be playing a Coventry or something, rather than a Luton or Bristol City in mid-table. So hopefully something for us there. And that really draws to the end of this show with episode 260. We will be back probably, or wouldn't want to guarantee a time, but hopefully on a Saturday or the Friday night after the Cardiff game. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Adam, for popping on this week.
No worries, absolute pleasure as per.
And Ben, always a pleasure.
Absolute pleasure, no problem at all. Look after yourselves, everybody.
And we shall be back after yet another massive Friday night showdown for Reading. We are 5 games away from the end of the season now, and Reading all of a sudden have it all to do. Let's hope that Reading can kick back into the playoffs with a big win against Cardiff, and maybe, just maybe, everything will be all right in the end. Until next time, come on, your ass.